This is Sandra Cisneros, author of The House on Mango Street, and this is listener-sponsored radio, 99.5 FM, WBAI, New York.
And one final note, the banyo recipe we heard was from local writer, meaning U.S. writer, Ana Castillo, included in her book, Massacre of the Dreamers. Stay tuned for Emmanuel Goldstein, coming up in just 1 minute.
You tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial, WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. Take it there.
Hey, yeah, we're the same brothers from a long time ago. We were talking about television and doing it on the radio. What we did was to help our generation realize they got to get out there and get busy because it wasn't going to be televised.
And it's just about 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night, and that means it's time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself off shaving, now I can't make a call. I couldn't get my break, but if she could, she would. Well, Billy Bones was a bitch.
Good evening to one and all. The program is Off the Hook. This is Emmanuel Goldstein with all kinds of fun-filled adventure stories from the world of high tech. We'll be taking phone calls a little later on and sharing some interesting stories of things that have happened in the past week. I guess one of the more interesting things that have happened to us specifically is the arrival of a little flexi-disc record that came from Vienna. And this is something that I guess nobody in this country has the guts to put out, so let's check out what our European friends are up to. It concerns an old friend of ours.
This is a digital hijack. I demand free Kevin Mitnick now. Kevin Mitnick, prisoner number 673/53 of State Prison, California. Accused of electronic communication abuse. On the run for more than 2 years behind the codename Condor as the most wanted computer hacker of the world. The digital hijack attacks everyone, everywhere. There is no security.
Direction down. I got a finger on the trigger. traveler. We have chosen a new destination for you. We'll take you to a place where there is no up or down, where there is no left or right, where there is no way back. And up to your friends, non-controllable data, action, intelligence, and so we are the scroll. The world will never be the same again. The time has come for the big, big showdown.
This statement will not be repeated. First of all, 9 neuralgic internet search servers have been invaded by our intelligent software agents. They are on call. They are ready to fulfill the following task: overflowing the search server systems. Lycos, Alta Vista, Intomi, NetSearch, Panopticon, Webcrawler, CUSI, InfoSeek Spider, and Veronica to hijack the worldwide traveling society. The result? Destabilization of the power servers. Navigation on the internet becomes a new excitement. Netscape has already hijacked the internet user. Now we hijack your attention to show you another direction. Smashing the boring style of established electronic traffic channels. Free Kevin Mitnick, the organization ETOI will wait another 24 hours until we blow the system. We are forced to find new viewpoints. Viewpoints. Directions. Channels. Excitement. To survive.
Trash this record now. Peep. It's plastic. Peep. Trash this record now.
Okay, there we do what we said. Now if the guys with the guns can just get out of here, we'll be able to resume our show. Thank you. Thank you very much. That came in the mail from Vienna, and it's kind of a fun thing. Came on a little flexi disc there. You know, remember those? You used to get them in Cheerios boxes and things like that. Yeah, well, that's a whole lot of fun. Comes from these people known as eToy, and you can I think you can get a free copy of this record if you just send them email. And let me track down their email address here. Mail me at etoy.com. That's mailme at etoy.com. Or you can call them at country code 41, city code 1-363-3557. They're demand-free Kevin Mitnick, the super hack. I'm not sure if Kevin would really like this kind of attention. It sort of, I guess, doesn't make him look all that good. But he's got nothing to do with this, that much I am certain of. A lot of interesting... I was wrong. You can get the record by sending email to record@hijack.org. Hijack.org, yes. record@hijack.org. In exchange for a statement to president at whitehouse.gov, with the demand to free Kevin Mitnick, the super hacker. It is definitely time to blast sound into the net, the soundtrack for the new traveling generation. The song Digital Hijack is the first internet underground disco release by eToy, our final record on FlexiDisc. Out now, this sound is an agent in your head to spread a new lifestyle. Joyride, the data highway, the net is our way to get around without major record companies. Always online, sometimes lost, out there in your mind, our flexi is plastic, worthless, nothing, our last bit of reality. What do you think, Fiber? Bit of fun, huh?
Yeah, right.
Well, you don't look that impressed. I don't know, I think statements like this are kind of interesting. It's what the net is all about, you know, getting alternative views and all that kind of thing. And they have a website, too. If you want more information, check out http://rom.oit.gatech.edu/tilde. This looks like willday/mitnick.html. And that's the story. That's everything you're going to hear about this. Yeah, the Kevin Mitnick Flexi Disc. Who knows? Who knows what's what's next out here? So, what's been up with you this week, Barber?
Well, I haven't heard any records made by East German terrorists, but it's been a rather uneventful week, I suppose.
From Vienna, actually.
From Vienna?
Yeah.
Well, they must have moved from Germany to
actually,
Vienna.
The return addresses are Vienna and Switzerland.
Really?
Yeah, so I don't quite understand what's going on there. Okay, well, how about this? Well, we've got sort of a European theme tonight, so I've got a survey form that came all the way over from the Access All Areas convention. And I'm going to give this to you.
Okay.
And you're going to go through a few of those questions and answer them as honestly as you can.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, so let's hear some of these winner questions. Everybody who went to Access All Areas was given this questionnaire. I understand three people returned it.
Hmm.
I don't know why, but that's just the way it was. When I said read it, I meant read it out loud.
Oh, out loud. Yeah. Okay.
So we are on the radio.
Yeah, question number one, are you still doing this activity?
They don't say what this activity is, do they?
No. Well, the title is Hackers and Crackers Survey.
Hackers and Crackers. I just love being called a cracker. Anything else? Any other good questions besides that?
Well, of course, they say, if no, how many years ago did you stop? Where do you get access to these resources? Home, at work, university or college, public resource, other, police state.
Can you say police state or
police state?
Oh, police state. Okay. All right.
How many systems have you broken into? 1 to 5, 5 to 10, 10 to 20, all the way up to 100+.
Wow. Okay.
Do you use any specialist software to help you hack? Yes or no?
Yes or no question. Okay.
What type of software do you use to hack? Please state. It's one of those little essay questions.
Uh-huh. How much space do they give you for that?
Three lines.
Okay.
What programming skills do you possess? Oh, we have a wide assortment here. Basic, DOS, Unix, Ada, Java, C, C++, Windows, COBOL, Assembly, none. Somebody should make a language called none.
Yeah, there you go. That would confuse everybody.
And, of course, other, please state.
Okay, other and none.
Yeah.
There are some really, really interesting questions further on. Versus how you would categorize yourself.
Oh, here's a good incriminating one.
Okay.
Have you ever done any of the following?
All right.
Used passwords illegally. Misuse personal data. Pass on confidential information. Expose confidential data. Hide confidential data. Sold passwords or codes. Sell confidential data. None of the above.
Interesting. A lot of those, you know, you can do without a computer, too. I think they should probably point that out. I think with regards to computers, what they're talking
99%
about.
99% of those are usually done without a computer.
Uh-huh. Where's the other? There's a terrorist one in there. That's the one I'm trying to get.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
There's a terrorist one?
Yeah, there's
one?
A terrorist one. I sort of gave it away by saying that. But
Which of the following organizations would you target to gain entry into? That one?
No, but I didn't hear that one. Read that one to me.
Okay. Would you target... and they have different categories, and then they say in the UK, in the US, or other country. And we have private company... IT company? You know what that
IT. International, telecommunications, I would imagine.
Yeah. No, because then they have telecoms companies right after that.
I don't know. Maybe it's information something or other, information technology or...
Okay, banking financial system, police national computer, national defense system,
national
not
defense
a consideration.
System, definitely. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I forgot. Yeah, you're just reading it out to everybody. Okay. But there's one in there that says, would you consider yourself to be a terrorist? That's the one that just kind of grabbed
me.
If
we could find that.
They give a list of different things that you would call yourself. You know, codes kid, wares kid, terrorist.
Oh, yeah. Personal details.
Yes, that's it.
Did you consider yourself to be a hacker, freaker, cracker, computer criminal, terrorist?
Yeah. It's interesting, you know. I don't know who's compiling all this information, but the questions seem a bit, I don't know, what's the word?
Stupid.
Yes, I was looking for a better word, but stupid will do. Yes, really, really stupid questions. I don't know if anybody filled that form out. And, you know, the thing that bugs me is when people categorize hackers as the same thing as terrorists or similar to terrorists, you know. Nothing so much as the events of this past week have proven what, you know, real terrorism at least could be. They have not yet proven that plane disaster was a terrorist act, but if it was, I mean, that's where the attention should be focused, preventing acts like that, and not going around pointing at teenage kids, accusing them of terrorism when all they're doing is at worst, playing with things they don't understand and possibly breaking things which shouldn't be left out to be broken.
I guess you didn't see the latest update on New York One.
No.
Well, somebody claims that somebody shot a computer at the plane with a slingshot.
What? I thought New York One was a serious station.
No, I just made that up.
You just made that up.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, New York One, I'm sure their attorneys will be contacting you very shortly. Joker, what do you have?
I'm just looking at this. First of all, they use the word tick instead of, like, we say check.
Yes.
I don't think of that.
British, yes.
Please tick which of these sentences you agree / disagree with. Sophisticated or improved technology acts as a deterrent. I am more likely to choose to enter a system with less security than a system with more security. Stricter legislation would act as a deterrent. An increase in the number of companies bringing prosecutions would act as a deterrent. I know someone who's been prosecuted for hacking. I've been prosecuted for hacking. Now, this is the one that I'm reacting to. Please tick all the following statements you agree with. Company safeguards to protect information are lax. Software programmers are lazy. Opportunities to gain access to systems are increasing. Opportunities to gain access to systems are decreasing. Tighter security would make gaining access more enjoyable.
Okay.
If yes, why? If not, why? How many people filled this out?
I didn't see anybody really filling it out. Everybody took it. Everybody was reading it and laughing over it, but I didn't see anybody fill it out. I'd like to see, you know, of the people that do fill it out, what the, you know, what the results are. According to the Hackers and Crackers survey that was passed out at the Hacker Convention last month in England, this research is being conducted to shed light on the hacking phenomenon, how it happens, when it happens, and what the key issues are for hackers and hacked. We are interested in information from current and ex-hackers that will help inform the debate. The contents of this survey are private and confidential. The anonymity of respondents will be respected at all times. Your cooperation in completing this questionnaire is greatly appreciated. And I guess you can access the survey. Okay, here's a website. You can access the survey at www.kinross-and-render.co.uk. I'll spell that. www.kinross-and-render.co.uk. Over there in the UK. .coms are known as .co's, and you have a .uk at the end. That's how it works. So that was a bit of fun over there. Continuing with some European news, this just came over to us from Bosnia. The Avatar Internet Cafe opened its doors on July 5th, 1996, in Sarajevo, Bosnia, Herzegovina. We are open 8 a.m. through curfew, which is currently 11 p.m., We serve cold Czech Budweiser on tap. Apparently Czech Budweiser is totally unrelated to Budweiser brand of beer they have over there. And there's all kinds of legal battles being flung across the ocean. They have that on tap, sandwiches, coffee, and we provide full internet access. Now get this, we currently have one PowerMac 7100 with a 21-inch monitor, a 14.4 KB link, and a UPS to protect us from nasty Bosnian power surges. That's it. That's all they have, a PowerMac and a 14.4 link. So far, we have had a mixed bag of customers, including the American Embassy staff, IFOR troops, I-F-O-R. I'm not sure what that stands for. Bosnian netheads, computer phobes, and drunkards. The American ambassador has promised to come if we agree to play the Pulp Fiction soundtrack. Makes you wonder what goes on in the ambassadorial headquarters. We have sponsored a local film festival and will continue to support the art here in Bosnia. Opening this place was a tough 9 months. We began paperwork in October. I would like to thank a lot of people, mostly Bosnians. I would also like to hang the carpenter and drive a wooden stake through his heart. I guess I can sympathize with that. I've dealt with some carpenters in my time. And if you want to donate something, I think that would be a really good idea to do that. The email address is sowden@m-as-in-mary.cz. That's in Czechoslovakia. Sowden, S-O-W-D-E-N, at ms.mff.cuni.cz. And I'm sure they could use anything that you've got that's spare. It's quite a lot to put up an internet cafe over there in Bosnia. Fiber, you've got some interesting advertisements. That,
yeah, it's apparently the corporate espionage classifieds.
The American newspaper, the Herald Tribune, which is passed around all over throughout Europe, has all these advertisements for callback services. Now, what's a callback service? It's where you call a certain number,
right.
and what happens? What happens when you call it? It calls you back?
Call a certain number, and it calls you back, so you can place a call from within the country. Calls you back with a dial tone and...
But why? Yeah, why go to all that trouble to make a phone call?
Well, gee, it could be cheaper rates.
Okay, I think you got it. I think you got it in one right there. Yes, cheaper rates, that's what it's all about. And yes, the international rates directly from a European country are phenomenal. So let's say you had to call from, Liechtenstein, okay, just to pick a typical... a typical European country, and you had to call over to, say, San Marino, another typical European country. The rates between those two countries would be, orbiting the Earth someplace. But if you call to some phone number someplace in the United States, I believe the way it works is it rings a couple of times on a special number that only you call, and then that tells it, hey, this person wants to make a phone call. It calls you at a predetermined number or something. And then you get a dial tone, you dial away your number, and you get charged the rate as if it was from the United States. I guess you also have to pay for the call, from the United States to you. I don't know how it works, but it's cheaper. It's cheaper. So how many ads are there? Can you give us some idea of what some of the phraseology is?
Enjoy major savings on your international calls. Save money on international calls. Callback with a K offers lowest rates ever.
And did they give an example of what the rates are?
Let's see. Yeah. How low, you may ask?
Yes, how low are these rates?
To the U.S. from France, 37 cents, assuming they mean a minute.
Right.
Germany, 39 cents. Hong Kong, 44. Japan, 38. Switzerland, 39. What? All calls are billed in 6-second increments with a 30-second minimum. That's the same as that LCI company that has those commercials on TV. They bill in 6-second increments.
6-second increments. I've even heard 1-second increments being
really?
Thrown around by some companies. Yeah, now I guess they're breaking it down to a tenth of the second or whatever. So, 1-second intervals and the lowest rates possible. But, yeah, there's a lot of talk about whether or not these services are even legal. Some countries are trying to shut them down. But I think just looking at all these advertisements here, it shows you how popular they are. Everybody's always out for a way to make a phone call for cheaper. And if the rates are astronomically high, why not try to figure out a way to make a phone call for cheap? And, nothing illustrates that better than the whole internet phone philosophy. Have you heard the latest, what our fine friends at Microsoft are doing? Last week it's a television network. This week they're taking on all the phone companies. They're going to be releasing tomorrow at http://www.intel.com/iaweb/cpc. www.intel.com/iaweb/cpc. Right. You will be able to download the Intel Internet phone. It took Microsoft and Intel getting together to force the issue, but this will be the year which some of the Internet telephony vendors, each with their own motivations, will provide their customers with the ability to interoperate with other vendors' products. In other words, you will be able to use this to call people no matter what kind of software they have, whether it's internet phone, iPhone, whatever you call the things. There's a lot of them around now. But the thing up until now has been that they can't talk to each other. That's all going to change. There's also been experimentation. Somebody actually did this a couple of weeks ago where they were able to place a call from one of the internet phone programs to a real telephone.
I heard of a number of people setting up things like that.
Uh-huh. But imagine what that's going to do to the phone companies, We're using the phone network now, we're starting with the internet and winding up in a real telephone.
Yeah, but I'd hate to be the person talking on a real telephone, waiting with all the net delay for the
person. I have heard the sound call. They actually did this to demonstrations on another radio station. It didn't sound bad at all. Really didn't sound bad. So, full duplex audio support, all kinds of graphical interfaces and things like that. I mean, it's coming. It's coming. The point is almost here where it will completely take over regular telephone calls. Well, do you think it will stay free, though, especially with Microsoft at the...
No, I think that's probably why they stepped in.
Yeah. Microsoft, unfortunately, seems to be controlling just about everything. I don't know exactly where it's going to wind up leading, but we'll just have to keep watching. Anyway, I'll grab a copy of that program and play with it. Maybe in the weeks ahead we can do some experimentation here on the radio, compare different kinds of programs together and see what happens. Continuing over in Europe, Philip Morris has been taking out these full-page ads in newspapers all over the place. And, you know, it's kind of funny because a lot of people smoke over in Europe, so Philip Morris wasn't really, I don't know, people didn't really hate them all that much. You know, they knew that they didn't really care one way or the other if these people got sick from smoking. They just sort of, I guess accepted their existence. But when they started taking out these advertisements, the people over there got so incensed that now they're moving to ban Philip Morris from ever advertising again. People are starting to realize how dangerous the cigarette smoking is, and all kinds of other things that that I guess has been happening over here in America. And it's all because of this patronizing way of talking to people that Philip Morris has perfected. Listen to this. What risks do you take? Almost every day, it seems that one thing or another has been discovered to be some kind of health risk. In one scientific study, even drinking ordinary chlorinated water was linked to cancer. But as common sense suggests, not everything described statistically as a risk is a meaningful risk. For example, lots of people have been persuaded that secondhand tobacco smoke is harmful. Not surprising, perhaps. After all, we recognize that smoking itself is a risk factor for certain human diseases, and that some people find secondhand tobacco smoke unappealing and unpleasant. But what about secondhand tobacco smoke? Is it really a meaningful health risk to people who've chosen not to smoke? Not, we think, if you look at the evidence. And then they come up with all these listings of other activities. For instance, having a diet highest in saturated fat, relative reported risk 6.14, whatever that scale is, risk for lung cancer, high diet in saturated fat, non-vegetarian versus vegetarian diet 3.08, frequently cooking with certain types of oil 2.8, eating one biscuit a day 1.49, and then all the way down on the bottom of the list, exposure to secondhand tobacco smoke 1.19. Now, you know, anybody with half a brain looking at this will say, but you know, the difference is that somebody sitting at a table next to you eating something high in saturated fat isn't really going to pose that much of a risk to you, whereas someone smoking a cigarette is going to affect other people. The fact that they completely didn't say that resulted in all this outrage over there, and it's really kind of fun. I'm sorry I had to leave so soon because the voices were just being raised as I was leaving, and now Philip Morris has kind of dug their own grave over there.
Wait, so does that mean that if you're eating a biscuit and breathing secondhand smoke, that you're doubling the odds of getting cancer?
If you look at these statistics, who knows? I mean, they seem to think that eating a biscuit... By the way, a biscuit is a cookie over there.
So, oh, really?
Yeah,
so
that's something else you got to consider. But eating one biscuit a day, that's, according to Philip Morris, that makes it more risky than being exposed to secondhand smoke. But, they fail to point out that secondhand smoke affects another person, not just you, and maybe more than one other person.
What if you smoke the biscuit?
I don't know. I think a lot of people smoke that newspaper after reading this. Okay, we have a letter here, which... I want to read because it has some very interesting points that I think we should go over. It sort of defines who we are, what we do, what we talk about, and it's a good letter. And I wish lots more people would write us letters because it gives us something to talk about. Dear Manuel Goldstein, I listen to your show Off the Hook and sympathize with Bernie S. and some of the other hackers' rough treatment under the criminal justice system. However, I believe that the two major premises used to justify hacking, going into others' computers and snooping around, are quite bogus. They are, one, it's educational, and two, it's so easy to get in. If it's so easy to do, it must be okay. Let's look at item number two first. Go along any farm field, and you could probably get in. Bushels of produce are sometimes left for later pickup. How could anyone justify just taking the farmer's goods because he didn't have a pit bull dog there ready to bite off your head? Well, I think, first of all, a very important distinction to be made is that when you go into somebody's farm field and start taking their produce, you are robbing them of something which obviously is not going to be replaced. It's a finite commodity, and you just go in there and you take something. It's called theft, and I think hackers are very aware of what theft is and what theft is not. Continuing with the letter, a great joy of hacking is raiding the email boxes or finding account files. In the physical world, the one beside cyberspace, there are people who are physically able to rip off the front panels of mailboxes and take mail. We are quite glad when they are caught and sent to jail. Likewise, con artists figure out how to get account information, and again, we are glad when they are caught, whether it's done under the guise of prankmanship or ill-gotten economic gain. Well, again, reading mail is something that is frowned upon in most circles that I'm aware of. But if somebody is sent to prison for actually breaking into a physical mailbox, I don't think they get sentenced to anything near the amount of time that somebody would get if they were accused of simply logging into a system, not even reading the mail, just accessing a system, or not even accessing a system, just trying to access a system. You know, it's getting, the definitions are becoming a lot easier to meet. So that's there are definite differences here in the way these things are perceived. Continuing with the letter, when a child is snatched from a playground, we all are shocked or upset, but it is quite easy. To spell it out, the easiness of irresponsible behavior does not justify it.
Okay, so I think just to sum up now, hacking is just like kidnapping children and
taking bushels of corn out of
bushels of corn, yeah.
Right.
Well, the problem I have with that analogy is that if a farmer could make infinite copies of his produce, I don't think he would mind very much.
That's true. I mean, he probably wouldn't be a farmer, because what's the point?
So far, every physical, real-world, tangible analogy to hacking that I've heard had to do with tangible goods.
Right, and the tangible goods that would get us upset, like children. You know?
Yeah.
Taking children is something that most people think is a bad thing.
Right.
So obviously, we're going to react strongly against that, but my problem is making the jump to where we equate hacking to taking children or taking anything, really. It's just, it's not the same thing. Basically, yeah, a lot of things are easy. Let's have this analogy, okay? You wander onto a farm field, and you walk around a little bit, and you explore the trails, and you enjoy nature a bit. How about that? That's the analogy. It's easy. Yeah, it's illegal, but you don't go to prison if you're caught doing it.
Hey, I just realized who the real one to blame behind all this is.
Who's that?
Space aliens have been landing in farm fields and stealing children for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And they weren't mentioned once in that letter.
Well, I'm not finished the letter yet either. Well, let's continue. Let's look at the first item. Hacking satisfies an educational need. A good parallel with computers is radio. Amateur radio allowed people to experiment, still does, allows people to experiment with electronics without interfering with the professional radio. That'd be us. Again, if the amateurs did interfere, even by accident, like if your TV show got screwed up somehow, most of us would be glad if the FCC put a stop to it. I'm sure you wouldn't want any radio hackers screwing around with WBAI. Well, again, you know, it's a question of differences here. Radio is something that, I guess, through a lot of unfairness, is in the hands of a few. Only a few people have access to what we're able to do. We're, you know, able to broadcast to people, say our opinions and things like that. Personally, my personal feeling is that that's unfair. I think everybody should have this opportunity. That's why I support the free radio broadcasters of California that kind of piggyback onto unused frequencies and use them without FCC sanctions and approvals and things like that. And, you know, they're referred to as pirate radio people, which I don't really think is a fair term. The way radio is now, of course, it's very controlled. Like, we had to play that song before and censor out every other word because the FCC would get upset if they heard those words for some reason, and that's just the way they are. Instead of just regulating frequencies and technical specs, they regulate content, which, you know, I don't consider to be fair. So what this person is equating is somebody intentionally interfering with an existing broadcaster, which people who start their own radio stations try very hard not to do. The reason being, if you do interfere with somebody else, it's obviously going to draw bad attention to you, and you will be shut down all the faster. So that's I don't think that's a very good analogy, because first of all, radio is not wide open. I think a better analogy to computer hacking and radio is somebody going out and listening to shortwave and exploring all the sidebands, exploring all the different frequencies, staying up until 4 in the morning to see what station comes on in this particular frequency. Now, imagine if that was illegal. Imagine if they said, you're restricted, you cannot listen to this particular radio. Hey, wait a minute, we already do have those kind of laws in this country, don't we? We can't listen to certain radio frequencies. Okay, well, there's your analogy then. You know, telling somebody that you are not allowed to turn on this dial and listen to this particular frequency at this particular time, it's not for you, or taking a signal that's coming into your house via satellites and telling people that they can't figure out how to decode that particular signal. That's more analogous to hacking than
interfering.
There's
a lot of Morse code that goes over shortwave also, and they could just easily say that you're not allowed to decode any Morse code you might hear on shortwave.
Yeah, you know, who uses Morse code? I can't figure this out. Who's out there tapping away with Morse code? Okay, we got one lunatic that does it. But I'd like to be able to decode that too. And also, if you tune around on shortwave, you hear those stations that sound like airplanes, you know, that's like high speed or low speed data or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what it is they're sending, you know, and who's sending what, but I'd sure like to be able to decode that and see just what's going on. I'm sure there's people out there that do this all the time, and they think we're really lame for not understanding it ourselves. But that's a better analogy to hacking. You know, the actual experimenting with technology, not interfering, not breaking something, not deliberately causing harm. That's totally what hacking is not about. To finish up the letter here, stepping away from amateur radio, other trades that people want to learn have schools or apprentice programs, and that includes computer programming. A lot of hackers have never taken courses in computer programming. Reason being, what would you say the reason is for that?
They suck.
Yeah, okay, that's one good reason. They're very restrictive. They tell you what you cannot do. When you ask why, they tell you to sit down and shut up. And they don't, you know, they don't get into any kind of real experimentation where you test the limits of technology. And folks, testing the limits of technology is how technology is expanded. That's how things are discovered.
Well, besides which, most schools can't afford the technology that's actually used in the business world, in the real world.
Right. There's a lot of have-nots. A lot of haves and have-nots. And then, you know, as we mentioned last week, the gap is widening between the haves and the have-nots. When you have TV networks going on the air that sort of require web access for you to get the full picture, you have to wonder, are these people that don't have, you know, computers, TVs, and you know, high-speed links and things like that, where does it leave them? To finish up, a point I'm trying to make is you and WBAI are supporting an irresponsible behavior which is quite elitist. If you examined an analogous behavior in the physical world, you'd be calling for its end, too. Well, you know, I think it's the elitist type of behavior that we're actually trying to fight. And I think most hackers are trying to fight that. If you look at who hackers are, you'll see that while some of them are from a privileged background, a lot of them are not. A lot of them are just simply gaining access any way they can. And, you know, lots of times, just gaining access is a crime because certain people are not allowed to have these particular types of computers in their homes. So the only way for them to get access to the net is to kind of piggyback onto something that's unused. I mean, a lot of us got our start that way. It's funny, when you see hackers like that being portrayed in the press, that's when the real danger starts. These are the real computer wilding people, you know, the people from ghetto backgrounds that are now, you know, on computer networks. Isn't it scary? And that kind of thing. It's, you know, there's your real world comparisons there. They're totally bogus. I don't think that that's really relevant to what we're all about. It's an interesting letter, though, and I encourage people to write us with their opinions, because we would like to see what people have to say, and I thank that person for writing. Our address is Off the Hook, care of WBAI, 505 8th Avenue, New York, New York, 10018. Or you can send us email, oth@2600.com. It's Off the Hook, oth@2600.com. So what do you think? You think it was a bomb, or you think it was a... Some sort of mechanical difficulty.
A big rock. No, actually...
The thing is, you know, everybody seems to have something that they want to prove, you know. They want to prove it's a mechanical failure so that we can say to ourselves, hey, you know, we're safe from terrorists. And other people want to say it was a terrorist because there's no way a plane could have a mechanical failure like that. They're both wrong, because both of these things are very, very possible and very likely.
Well, both of them are... Obviously, the fact that a plane could blow up and kill all those people, whether somebody did it or whether TWA did it, is equally bad.
Right.
I think at this point, TWA should be praying for a bomb.
I guess...
Because people aren't going to fly on an airline whose planes just spontaneously explode after they take off.
No, that's true. That's true. And I really could never understand getting into a plane and feeling comfortable. It just doesn't work for me. And I don't know why it works for everybody else, unless you somehow just manage to cloud your brain completely.
You know what you could do?
What?
You could bring a bomb with you whenever you fly. At least then you'll know where the bomb is.
Well, yeah, I suppose. And what do you think of those guys that were able to get by security? They didn't get by with a bomb. They just got by and managed to get all the way to the boarding gate without even going through the metal detector.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's an analogy to hacking in a strange kind of a way, where you get past the security for the point of proving that you can do it. But when you tell somebody that, they treat you as if you're, you know, you're a criminal yourself. But, you know, I sure would like to know if somebody can get by that kind of security. And up until this event, I had no idea that that there was no way of detecting most explosives, which is what I'm being told now. I mean, D'Amato, Senator D'Amato, was going crazy, saying, "Oh yeah, you would never want to fly again if you knew what I knew." he wouldn't get into details, but it's just basically, you know, he was painting this doomsday scenario that there's just no security whatsoever. And, you know, I always thought that all that metal detection thing was for a point. It seems now that there's little point to it. I mean, you know, you go onto an airplane and you carry something with you and they don't check it out. Like, say, your beeper or something like that. You give it to them, right? And they put it in that little silver tray.
Right.
And then they give it to you on the other side. Now, if they don't tell you to check out the beeper and make it work and something like that, they don't know what's inside. It could be anything. And you've just managed to bypass the entire detection process.
Well, the worst thing is portable computers, because all they ever do is that they ask you to take it out and open it up and they turn it on. And if they see some kind of title screen come up,
right,
then they figure it's okay.
So all someone has to do is invent a bomb that has a title screen and
better yet. I mean, you could use a small battery and put putty explosive in the rest of the free space. Uh-huh. There's a lot of air in a lot of laptops.
What if your laptop is broken and it doesn't come up with a...
I guess you can't bring it with you, can you?
That's interesting. The point is, there's a lot of security holes, and I remember seeing one of the newspaper reports, one of the people in charge of security said that we don't talk about this kind of thing because we believe that talking about security gives us less security. This guy should be a system administrator for CERT or something like that, because that is the most bogus way of dealing with security issues, kind of like out of sight, out of mind. You know, you have to talk about this kind of thing. You have to raise all possibilities, all scenarios, because that's the only way you're going to outsmart people that really want to cause harm. Unfortunately, that doesn't seem to have been happening. But again, you avoided the question. Which do you think it was?
I think it's a bomb.
You think it was a bomb?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Based on what?
Based on the fact that the plane blew up.
Well, okay, so you don't think a plane could do that on its own?
Under normal circumstances, I'd say that's highly irregular.
Uh-huh. And how about the surface-to-air missile? What do you think that's...
I think that somebody somewhere would have had to have noticed some, like, mad Arab with a rocket launcher on the ground in order for that to have actually happened.
Well, you know, everybody was saying it was mad Arabs that blew up the Oklahoma City building. It turned out to be mad red, white, and blue.
Okay,
Americans.
Mad Arab / militant Michigan weirdo person.
And they weren't from Michigan either, but we won't get into semantics on that. Joker, what do you have?
Did you hear about the security breach at the Olympics?
I heard some guy with a gun walked right into the Olympic studio.
Had a security uniform
stadium.
On, walked right in, and they finally caught him when one of the other security people asked him to produce ID.
Uh-huh.
Wasn't able to produce it. He was questioned by the Secret Service and was set free on X amount of dollars bond when they determined he was not a direct threat to the president.
Interesting. The president, that's all they care about? They got 80,000 people in the stadium, and all they care about is safety of that one person. That's the Secret Service for you. Actually, I wish they would be that focused and they wouldn't expand their territory so much. All right, we have phone calls to take, 212-279-3400. We'd like to hear theories and maybe experiences at airport machines. I wish they would spend as much time checking people out on the way in to airplanes as they do on the way into the country. You know, like every time I come into the country, I get all this third-degree stuff. You know, I think it's more important for people getting on to things like airplanes for them to know where they're coming from and what they're carrying with them, but they don't seem to really care that much. Okay, 212-279-3400 is our telephone number. Let's take some phone calls, see who's out there. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, just in your closing remarks a moment ago, I was surprised to hear the emphasis that you folks are placing on terrorism. Not that terrorism isn't a major issue in the world today, but as I was talking with a friend earlier today, nobody's looking at the causes of these events. For instance, I don't hear anyone bemoaning the fact that Clinton launched several cruise missiles at a hotel in downtown Baghdad.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, what was the final count of dead in the Gulf War on the other side? I've never been able to get a straight figure on that, but I've heard it's been hundreds of thousands.
Correct. Correct. And again, my empathy goes completely with the people who lost loved ones on the flight. In no way am I suggesting that that is not a momentous event. And with all due respect, these people have suffered a terrible and a grievous loss.
You also have to ask yourself, how much grief are the Olympics worth? You know, I mean, we say, hey, we have to have the Olympics in this country, but look at what we're doing to ourselves. We're all going crazy with looking over our shoulders, thinking that we're going to be attacked in Atlanta, attacked in New York, any place. Is it really worth it? I mean, if we live in a society where we can't guarantee safety, then maybe we should just, you know, leave the Olympics to some other country that really doesn't have that many enemies.
Well, actually, that's precisely what my question is arising from, this emphasis on terrorism. When you look at the records of the people who are the spokespeople around so-called terrorist events, Stephen Emerson is one name that pops up all the time. The Kroll Associates is another name. There are other firms that have a very distinct and long-standing ties to CIA, whose names are routinely cited as quote-unquote experts on terrorism. There is a very real need to promote terrorism as being something for the ordinary citizen to worry about. I'm far more worried about what the police will do to me in Brooklyn than I am about the notion of dying on a plane flight.
Uh-huh.
So I just wanted to bring that issue up.
I guess that's kind of like the defining point for us. How much are you willing to put up with to be considered quote-unquote secure and safe?
Precisely, and that argument serves very real social control goals and aspirations of the people who run the society. For instance, the more controls that are placed on people as they travel, the more ready people are to control the movements of people who are working, for instance, to ensure that workers get a fair wage.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly it's not about people who are carrying bombs. It's about questioning everybody about where they're going and what they're doing, which is a very different premise to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole emphasis on terrorism, the fear and hysteria that is induced is yet another replacement for the common enemy that societies have sought to create since time immemorial, justifying the violent wars that people in control seek to have.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Sure, thanks for the program. It's great stuff.
All right. You think we need more surveillance, more security? It's a hard question. I mean, you know, in the wake of all this, how can you say you don't need more? But you also have to look at the long-term picture. You know, what does more actually give us? You know, people looking over our shoulders, they have this detector now for certain airports that when you walk through it, it shows you as if you're not wearing any clothes, removes all those from you somehow. Now, would you submit voluntarily to something like that? You know, everybody getting on an airplane, going through this machine, and the people, the McDonald's workers that, you know, look at these things. And that's what I call them, because they get paid the exact same amount in many cases. And I've seen them. As you walk through this thing, they're having conversations with each other, not even looking at the screen half the time. You know, you have to sort of wonder how qualified they are. I heard that some of them just get about 3 hours of training, and that's it. So you have to wonder, these are the people that, you know, your life is kind of entrusted to. So I don't know if I want them looking at me as I'm walking through with no clothes on either. So I don't know. That's something else. You think we need more security in that regard?
I think it's a pretty tough argument. Obviously, the more security you add, the easier it is for the those who implemented the security to take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And, you know, it's weird, too, that we're seeing the same people commenting on this. The caller mentioned Kroll Associates. You know, they're always commenting on hackers.
Right.
And it really annoys me to see the parallels drawn between something like this and hackers, you know, as if they're even remotely similar. They're so completely distant, and I just hope the people that comment on hackers aren't as clueless when they comment on something as important as this. You really got to hope that. Good evening. You're on the air.
Emmanuel, have you seen Monday's Wall Street Journal?
Well, considering I never read the Wall Street Journal, probably not. No.
Well, speaking of terrorists and hackers, your worst fears are confirmed. I'm going to read a short piece of the article, but just let me say that just about everything I don't read talks about tagging explosives and finding recipes for sarin on the Internet, okay?
Okay.
This is from this past Monday's, yesterday's Wall Street Journal article. It's called "A Step Behind. Despite tough words, anti-terrorism effort in U.S. is still flawed." Subheadline, political legal constraints, old technology hinder FBI as threat grows. Subheadline, nerve gas recipe on internet. Okay, some excerpts. Quote, the technology exists for imposing an Orwellian state with unprecedented degrees of control, says Brian Jenkins, an expert on terrorism and deputy chairman of the investigative firm Krull Associates.
Oh, boy.
But if that's the consequence of a terrorist attack, then the terrorists have won. Further excerpts. The administration, the Clinton administration, wanted the FBI to have the authority to conduct multi-point wiretaps, which would enable investigators to monitor cellular phones, car phones, and pay phones that suspects might use, as well as home or office phones. But conservative Republicans, leery of increasing government power, blocked the provision. Quote, it was unfortunate Congress didn't approve that authority for multi-point wiretaps, says James Kallstrom, assistant director of the FBI, who's now leading the agency investigation of the TWA crash. Quote, that's here and now. That's something we need, unquote. In an interview at the Investigative Command Center, Mr. Kallstrom says the FBI also needs to enhance its ability to deal with new technology, including email, encrypted messages, and digital telephones that terrorists and criminals may use to communicate with others. Getting people to come from the industrial age to the information age is difficult. We're going to create sanctuaries for criminals if we don't keep up with the information age.
So is this guy actually saying that if they were able to wiretap all these people that they could have prevented this?
He's hinting very strongly. Just a couple more things. In an increasingly increasingly complex and computerized society, terrorists' ability to shut down crucial segments of the nation's infrastructure also stirs growing concern. Airplanes are the most obvious and spectacular targets, but computer networks, telecommunication systems, electrical power grids, and banking systems are also increasingly seen as vulnerable. A few days before the TWA bombing, Clinton issued a little-noted executive order calling for the creation of a Commission on Critical Infrastructure Protection to explore what laws, regulations, and finances will be needed to defend the nation's economic communications and transportation system from terrorist attacks. Jamie Gorelick, Deputy U.S. Attorney General, said the one-year effort deserves the same level of urgency as the Manhattan Project, the crash World War II effort to develop the atom bomb. Quote, we're looking for a structure that cuts across the government and private sector, Ms. Gorelick said in testimony to Congress, noting few U.S. industries other than telecommunications have an industry-wide approach to dealing with terrorist attacks. Quote, we will have the cyber equivalent of Pearl Harbor at some point, and we don't want to wait for this to happen.
Unquote. Okay, yeah, we've all heard that before.
I know, but I think it's rather telling that in what is widely believed to not be some rogue hackers shooting a computer with a catapult at a plane and downing it, that somehow even a normally staid, conservative, and well-reasoned newspaper as the Wall Street Journal somehow puts a front-page article on that links hackers to a terrorist act.
Yeah, if not, factually, at least in the back of your mind, theoretically.
I'm totally appalled.
As you should be. Thanks for the call.
Right, bye.
Okay. You know, speaking of Clinton and what he's coming up with lately, he came up with something today, a real gem. Did you hear this one? I guess he just sits around in his office thinking of ideas. This idea is, why don't we have a new phone number for those 911 calls that aren't really emergencies? You know, a nationwide standard for non-emergency calls to the police. I don't know if it's going to be 912 or something like that, or who knows. But this, I mean, how long do you think it took to think of that? I mean, those are the kind of things I think of in the shower, you know, sometimes. You know, hey, that'd be a good idea, but there's all this press attention, but nobody has said anything specific, you know. It's just the president has thought that it's a good idea to have another phone number for non-emergency calls to the police, a nationwide standard.
Like, what is that like if somebody breaks into your house with a gun and then they just leave suddenly?
Well, I guess it's for all those occasions when you need to call the police and you don't know what to call and you have to go to the phone book and look it up, and it's no big deal because it's not an emergency, you know.
Yeah.
So now they want to have it so that, you just have it in the back of your head all the time.
Then you'll have to pay tax for the enhanced non-emergency number.
Exactly. I think that's the real goal here. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I think it's a real shame that what will happen is that no doubt Congress people and senators and so on will use this explosion or whatever it was as a means of lobbying for more money to have more anti-terrorism acts passed, and you know, more anti-terrorism mechanics or whatever you would call armaments all around the United States. And this already was a bill. This was proposed a couple of weeks ago, and it passed last week because of the one that blew up in Saudi Arabia. I mean, not even in our own territory. And Senator Sam Nunn said, "We are woefully unprepared to deal with this kind of catastrophic act of terrorism if it occurs." So what Congress has drawn up was a measure to take millions of dollars and give it to local police forces to train your local police to be more equipped in anti-terrorism. Now, I don't know what that means that they're going to have, but you know, now there's
it could be something that is needed, but we need to know exactly what it is that they're planning on doing and make sure it doesn't at the same time infringe upon the rights of the rest of us, because you know, it's an important issue. We shouldn't just brush it away. But at the same time, we have to always respect the freedoms that supposedly we stand for. Anyway, we are out of time. Very sorry about that. We can talk about this for hours, and no doubt we will in the future. We'll be back again next week with another fun-filled edition of Off the Hook. Until then, have yourselves a safe week, and stay out of trouble. We'll be in touch over the airwaves. Take care.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself off shaving, now I can't make a call. I couldn't get my break, but if I could, they would. Or did it bounce on the bed, it's the word. I hope that's understood, but did it know?
Imagine a world with healthy, free-flowing, wild rivers. Rivers of life that provide clean, fresh water for people, habitat for fish and countless...